When we share someone's story here on the Diaries, the episode might end, but their story doesn't. So many of the people we've talked to, they've gone on to do incredible things. They have epic adventures and make significant impacts in our community. Over on Diaries Plus, we're catching up with some of our former guests to see what they've been up to. I recently sat down with Connor Ryan, a Lakota professional skier from our Sacred Slopes episode, who's been knocking out groundbreaking projects ever since the episode aired. It's really incredible. We had a great discussion about the impacts he's made, what keeps his fire burning, and taking ski lessons as a pro skier. Here's a snippet of the conversation.
All the source of joy that I use to fill my cup to be out in the world doing positive things comes from my relationship to the outdoors. And so I really focused on like, wow, like there's so much power if I can give one person the relationship to the outdoors that I have through skiing. And maybe that will have as profound of an effect on them as it's had on me.
To listen to the full episode, use the link in the show notes to subscribe to Diaries Plus today. Yeah, you get more shows, but you also have a peace of mind of powering what's out there right now, keeping us moving forward, keeping this community together. So thank you for everyone who supported and everyone who's going to support. We appreciate it. So it's that time, everyone. Today, our good friend, co-worker, Lisi Hendricks, has a story for you to kick off our annual Tales of Terror episode. And just a warning here, there is some mention of adult content at the end of her story, so if you've got kids listening, you might want to skip ahead.
So a few years ago, my then boyfriend, now husband, Ryan, and I wanted to go climb the original route in Red Rock Canyon on Rainbow Wall in Las Vegas. And we live in Las Vegas. We climb in Las Vegas a lot. And in order to do that route, you need a lot of time. It's a big hike back and it requires just a lot of technical hard climbing and it's cold and there's lots of rappels at the end. So it takes quite a bit of time. And so we parked our car outside of the park around 4:30 in the morning and started hiking in to go climb Rainbow Wall. And as we're hiking in, we were pretty silent. I mean, it's really early in the morning and you're exhausted and you just want to get to the climb as soon as possible. And my husband is a man of few words anyways, so it was just complete silence in the desert, which can be really nice and feel really good that early in the morning. And so we're hiking and all of a sudden, about a mile into the trail, we start hearing, ah, ah, and it sounded like someone just yelling help at the top of their lungs, but from really far away. So we both looked at each other and we were kind of like, what is going on? Is that someone yelling help? Like, man, this is so weird. Like, there's no headlamps. We can't see any lights. We're the only car out there. Like, I don't think there's anyone here. So we keep walking, kind of ignore it, and it continues. We're just hearing, help, help, just so loud. We're getting closer and closer and closer, and it's really starting to get worrisome. And I'm kind of freaking out at this point. I'm like, there's somebody stuck on a wall out here, or they've fallen, they've broken their leg, that's why there's no headlamp. We're hiking faster. At this point, we've like given up on climbing Rainbow Wall because we're like, we are going to be helping someone who is very hurt. And the calls are just getting louder and harder to like figure out the direction that they're coming from. And so we're just hiking off trail at this point. And as we get closer and closer to the noise, Ryan turns around and looks at me and says, it's over there. It's two donkeys. They're having sex.
Oh my goodness. That is so not where I thought we were headed with this. It's that time of year again. Halloween decorations hanging from dark branches, soft rustling of fall leaves, spooky shadows lurking around the corner. That's right, it is time for the annual Tales of Terror episode. Grab a teddy bear. We're about to bring you three true stories from the backcountry that will send chills down your spine. I'm Fitzko Hall, and you're listening to the Dirtbag Diaries.
My wife Susan and I both grew up in Alaska, and we wanted to continue the tradition of spending lots of time outside, into our marriage, and with our growing family. But sleeping with three kids, ages 8, 5, and 2, in a tent is rough. We didn't want to go full Winnebago, so we settled on a Sprinter and outfitted it with some bunk beds and a few other amenities. When weekend trips got to be comfortable, we set out for longer excursions to Utah, Colorado, in California. On a trip to Colorado, we spent the day hiking and playing in nearby streams in the Holy Cross Wilderness. Colorado is amazing for its off-grid camping spots. We found a place for the evening just up the road from an abandoned cabin. It had some trees, and it opened up to a meadow with a thick tree line all the way around it. We made dinner, roasted s'mores, and told campfire tales. Then we all packed into the van and turned out the lights. I fell asleep faster than normal. I woke up in an instant. I had heard something, but I was too tired to realize what it was. I laid perfectly still, straining to hear that sound again. Nothing. Just silence. My mind raced. Was I dreaming? No, it was too loud to be from a dream. There again. Was something screaming? Yelling? I jumped out of bed and went to the window in the cab. It took a moment for my eyes to adjust. There was a half moon, but very little clouds. I scanned the tree line, looking for something. A coyote? A fellow camper in trouble? Maybe a cougar? Eventually, my concern gave way to curiosity, and I decided to get out of the van. I had to pee anyway. Trying not to wake my family, I slipped out the front door. I could feel how chilly it was outside. Hello? Nothing but cool silence. I stepped out a couple feet, away from the van, and peed. Still looking at the tree line, and scanning the meadow for movement. Nothing, just the moonlight and the mountains. I got back in the van and sat for a moment. As I glanced to the left, out the window, I jerked back, then leaned in. There was a man outside my door, just standing there, looking at me. I scrambled to lock the door. I yelled through the window, "What the hell? What do you want?" The man took a single step back and turned around slowly and just walked away. I sat there in the front seat. Susan was cursing and asking who I was yelling at. I turned on the headlights, straining to see where he went. What was he doing out there? Why was he messing with me? I did not elaborate to Susan about what I saw and dismissed the encounter as a deer sighting, and the kids barely stirred. Soon, everyone went back to sleep, except me. I sat there for another hour, just waiting to hear or to see something else. I eventually fell back to sleep. I awoke in a panic. That noise again. It's louder this time. Closer? I was moving. No, the van was moving. It was rocking side to side. Susan and the kids were startled awake, screaming and crying. I scrambled for the keys. Still, the van was rocking side to side, more violently now. After what seemed like forever, I started the van, and the shaking stopped immediately. I turned on the headlights. No one. I looked in the mirrors, illuminated by the brake lights, and nothing. I didn't care, though. We left in a hurry, nothing but a dust cloud behind us. The kids didn't calm down till we hit the pavement. Still, in the middle of the night, I found a well-lit street to wait for daylight and get some rest. I'm still not sure who or what it was that tormented us that night. But the next morning, after the dust had cleared, the sun was up, and we felt safe again. While getting gas, I noticed something. Handprints on the dust-soaked back window of the van. They were too big to be mine.
That was Christopher Baker. Glad you and your kids made it out in one piece. Next up, a story from Alan Shidley.
Southern Illinois lives in the shadows, haunted by the blackness cast from the hollers of the Shawnee Hills. The land is steeped in a bloody history, from the Trail of Tears and the Ku Klux Klan to gang warfare in the 1920s during Prohibition. So when things go bump in the night around here, that history, brimming with mankind's most heinous, real-life fiends, seems all too alive. One holler in particular has shadows livelier than others. Happy Hollow causes wariness for travelers as they feel vulnerable to what lies just beyond the car's headlights. There, the unknown still holds power, and not all of its mysteries have been revealed. A few years ago, I was living near Kansas City, and Zach, my old climbing partner, back in our hometown in central Illinois. We agreed to rendezvous at the end of Happy Hollow, to camp the night before bouldering at the beach. Nestled along the banks of the big, muddy Mississippi, the beach arguably has the most unique sandstone boulders in the Midwest. With fall break arriving, Zach and I decided to start our climbing here before traveling on to other Southern Illinois classics. As I drove east, passing the Gateway Arch with Illinois in front of me and Missouri in my rearview mirror, Zach called. "Dude, I'm not camping here," said Zach. For the first time in all the years knowing him, he sounded uneasy and incapable of breathing. I laughed. I knew I was only an hour away and couldn't imagine what could be wrong with that spot. Anyway, it was the closest campsite, but Zach's voice continued to tremble. He told me he had driven to the end of the holler, and the entire time branches kept bending violently to scratch his car. I reassured him it was a windy day. There were even small waves on the Mississippi. Zach wasn't convinced. "That's not why," he bellowed. "At the end of the road, there's blood everywhere and crazy noises coming out of the woods." I shrugged it off, amused. It was probably just the work of a mountain lion. I told Zach he could wait for me at the intersection of Happy Hollow Road and Highway 3. Zach must have called another dozen times after that conversation, complaining about rumbles in the timbers, hisses in the thickets, and roars from the navel of the holler. When I arrived, I convinced Zach to ride shotgun back into the holler. We passed the last house on the left, and darkness fully enveloped us. Outside the car, I perceived muddled, indiscernible noises. I rolled down my windows. Yelps and howls and wails surrounded us. First, one at a time, and then and a chorus. We argued about throwing the car in reverse to escape, but I couldn't. I had to see the end. I had to see what Zach saw. The darkness tinkered with my mind. My eyes attempted to pierce the abyss of nothingness beyond the headlights. I caught glimpses of movement from bodies. Maybe two, four. I couldn't count. My chest groaned, and my breath barely escaped my mouth to collide with the chilled autumn air. With the end of the road in sight, the noises began to decrease. As I shifted the car into park, I questioned our frailness and the presence of whatever lurked in the shadows. I opened my car door to step out. Silence fell upon us. Only a few muddled cries sounded from behind the pines. Zach stayed put in the car, frozen by fear. The scene illuminated in my headlights looked like something from a Quentin Tarantino film. Blood smeared into the gravel road, fur and body parts flung into the pine branches nearby. A deer, if that's what it had once been, lay dismembered on the ground, nail markings carved not only into the deer's body, but also into the surrounding ground in no discernible pattern. This deathbed was not natural. I know from growing up around deer hunters that this was not their doing. Uncle Dale taught me how to skin a deer right in his very garage. This was not a man-made sight. I shouted to Zach, "Let's go!" and jumped back into the car. With a harvest moon overhead, Zach and I manifested into world-class stock car drivers as we barreled down Happy Hollow Road and out of the holler. Even above the sound of the car's redlining engine and the tires kicking up gravel beneath us, we heard the shrieks from the holler's crevices and weathered the bombardment of branches on the roof of the car. Once on Highway 3, we hurried north, away from Happy Hollow, and camped that night along the banks of the Kincaid Lake. I haven't been down Happy Hollow Road since, despite my frequent travels to Southern Illinois. And I still don't fully comprehend what Zach and I experienced that fall evening. Some months later, Zach forwarded a link for the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization, showing two accounts of alleged Bigfoot sightings along Happy Hollow Road. I'm not one to dismiss the legend of Bigfoot. However, I do believe that whatever we experienced that night was not the torment of a singular being, but of many.
After the break, our final terrifying tale. Stay with us.
Calling all business owners out there.
Yeah, I'm talking to you. Our planet needs businesses to be better. Newsflash, right? There's a way we do that. One of the moments in our journey as a company that Becca and I are most proud of is the day we joined 1% for the Planet 14 years ago. We know we have an impact. It's undeniable, right? It's not someone else's problem, it's our problem. And we wanted to become a part of a global network of individuals, businesses, and environmental not-for-profits driving real impact. So every year there's a day where we sit down and we plan our giving. It starts with a donation, but we've been able to bolster that with in-kind donations. There's all sorts of ways to do this. Other companies give employee volunteer time, so there's a solution that's right for you. The biggest thing is it connects us with others who care and organizations going to bat for the values we believe in. And it makes us feel part of something bigger than our small company. So if you're a business owner, big or small, publicly traded or not, there's room for you in this movement. Visit 1percentfortheplanet.org/dirtbagdiaries for more information. Be a part of this. We may have more than one career, but there is only one planet. 1% for the planet.
A few months ago, my husband Dustin and I headed to Tuolumne, the high country of Yosemite, for a much-needed summer getaway. We set out in our Honda CR-V, equipped to sleep too, complete with Dustin's handmade wooden sleep panel and a luxurious mattress. Dustin and I share a birthday, August 23rd, and we couldn't wait to celebrate in a beautiful outdoor space together. We drove through Yosemite Valley, hot and resplendent with granite walls, and up to our destination of Tuolumne Meadows. We arrived in the land of granite domes, towering pines, and isolated paths. We parked the car and climbed Tenaya Peak, and afterwards paddled in the azure waters of its namesake lake. Everything felt perfect. A few hours later, we pulled into our campsite, excited for a quiet evening of camp cooking and stargazing. As Dustin began making dinner, I wandered around the campsite. It was a unique spot, defined by a small clearing perpendicular to the narrow paved country road. The campsite started with the hole, a small stretch of dirt road about 20 yards long, between two massive granite boulders on each side, a protected entrance. It continued slightly uphill and opened up on both sides into an elliptical clearing with uneven but firm ground. Beyond the campsite, the slope inclined up an imposing mountain with rocks sitting precariously at their angle of repose. There was but one way out, back through the hall onto the dirt road. A wind drifted through the clearing, at first soft and pleasant, welcome after the day's heat. However, as I meandered through the campsite, the wind crescendoed into a stronger, more menacing gale, accompanied by soft rustling and whistling noises that I attributed to the falling of the night. We finished dinner and set up the car for the night. We slid the front seats up and released the wooden panels on their folding legs to support the mattress. Soon we had pillows and sleeping bags and lights hanging off the inside handles. We kept the windows cracked for airflow and could even see the stars through the insect mesh. The Milky Way appeared, and then the first planets, followed by Io and Ganymede and Cassiopeia. As luck would have it, we had taken this trip during the Perseid meteor shower, so we were treated to quite a show. Engrossed in the night sky, we paid no mind to the sounds stirring in the empty clearing. Something was waking, stretching, watching us. But we did not hear. Instead, getting tired and reflecting on the joys of the day, we had a last toast and retired to sleep. All was quiet then. But a few hours later, I jolted awake. Something was moving outside. I heard a loud noise coming as if from the center of the earth. It grew louder. I held my breath. Dustin stirred, hearing it too. It drew closer. It sounded like the creature, whatever it was striking a piece of wood with an axe repeatedly, shattering it into a million pieces. Out of the windows, we perceived an emerging glitter of light, growing brighter without an owner or a source. Then, out of the back window of our car, we saw a figure moving towards us. It had a gaunt, tall frame, but no visible face. It was enshrouded in darkness. The figure moved quickly as if floating, approaching us rapidly. The figure's hands juggled something sparkly, lights that changed colors, sparkling from blue to emerald green to crystal clear. That figure stopped right outside our car. We could see its light eyes as a faint outline of a face appeared. Its hands still juggled the lights as the noise of splintering wood continued, louder than ever. While its hands moved, the tall frame stood perfectly still. It hypnotized us with fear. I felt my muscles tighten and my throat dry up. One sideways glance at Dustin confirmed that he was suffering the same paralysis. The apparition continued its dance, floating in circles around our car. Its hands went up, and so did the lights, raised to the level of the face. Then, it brought the lights over its head, where they formed a glowing halo. The lights resembled patterns that I thought I could recognize from the night sky. I could not move, and I could not scream. I could feel the blood in my veins flowing in obedience to the desperate pumping of my heart. That was the only muscle in my body allowed to proceed, a double effort to maintain my life. Sweat poured down my back and my face. Terrified as I was, I could not hear anymore, and darkness closed in around my eyes. The sparkling stars the ghost had cast faded away. I could not see them, or the car, or Dustin. What was happening? Eventually, I felt my body unfreeze. First, I could move my fingers and toes. Then I could see shadows near me, the outline of the car, and Dustin next to me. The cold sank in, penetrating my layers and freezing my sweat. Sound flooded back into my ears. A rustle of the sheets sounded like the roar of Niagara Falls, and my husband's breath suddenly had the intensity of a tornado. My own heartbeat felt like the pounding of 1,000 drums. The strange apparition had gone. Dustin and I got out of the car without a word. All was still. The car stood where it had been parked last evening, the telescope neatly folded beside it. The darkness was slowly relinquishing its powers to the first light of the day. In a hurry, we folded the wooden planks, moved the front seats forward again, and buckled our seatbelts. Driving through the boulders into the narrow hall, we saw a trail of splintered wood leading out to the road.
That was Joanna Gedzier. Thank you, Alan, Christopher, and Joanna for sharing your stories. Our stories come from friends of friends, and from you, our community. If you have a compelling idea or a guest or a story lead, please give us a shout. You can use the submission form on our website, dirtbagdiaries.com. Music today from Aiden Barker, David Beer, Kai Engel, and Bradley Carter. The tracks are courtesy of the artists or Free Music Archive. Jacob Bain and Nise Kodo composed our theme song. You can find the links to the artists at our website, dirtbagdiaries.com. This episode was produced by Cordelia Zars, Becca Cahal, and Ashley Langholz. Illustration by Walker Cahal, graphics by Anya Miller. Becca Cahal is our executive producer. I'm Fitz Cahal, and you've been listening to the Dirtbag Diaries. Happy Halloween, and vote.